BBC headlines take us up to 4 minutes past 8 o'clock here at Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. Good morning, I'm Maeve Conran. And coming up on today's show, we'll get a report from last night's Boulder City Council meeting where the process to move towards a municipalised electric utility was under discussion. After that, a new book is being released today sharing stories of educational justice, and it features a chapter from the co-founder of the Denver-based organisation Patres y Jóvenes Unidos. We'll hear from Patres about their work in Denver public schools, the successes that they've had in education justice, and some of the challenges as well. Then two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You and Naturally, will take us to the bottom of the hour. Following the headlines from the BBC, we'll get a brand new commentary from Jim Hightower. And then it's time for the real deal in sports. And today will be the final real deal as host Josh Chetwynd moves on to other adventures. Today, he and his guests will take a look at double standards for women in sports. The stepping off point is how Serena Williams was treated at the US Open. They'll discuss all aspects of parity between women and men in sports, from pay to treatment on the field or court, as well as perception in the media. They'll also ask whether Title IX has helped to bridge any gaps. As always, your calls will be welcome. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. For that, here's Jamie Sudler.
The Boulder City Council last night recognized Serene Singh, the first University of Colorado woman to receive a Rhodes Scholarship to attend England's Oxford University. A senior political science and journalism major, she is among a handful of Sikh Americans to claim the scholarship and the first CU student since 1993. She was on hand with her mother and sister and thanked council members for the recognition.
It looks as though it's one Rhodes Scholar and one person's journey, but I know that's not the case. I know it took a city, it took a state, it took a family, it took a lot of tears from a lot of people to bring me to this point.
At Oxford, Singh plans to pursue criminology and criminal justice and says she hopes someday to become the second CU graduate to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court. The first was the late Byron White. Boulder City Council also discussed the municipalization process at last night's meeting, and we'll have a full report on that after headlines. The federal government has reacted to plans by the City of Denver to open a supervised drug use facility. Yesterday, the U.S. Attorney's Office and the DEA sent a letter to the city saying that such sites would be illegal under federal law. Denver has already passed a measure to host a location where people could inject heroin or other drugs safely. As the Denver Post reports, the idea behind the site is that it will prevent overdose deaths and assist people to get services. But the federal officials compared the plan to a so-called crack houses and claimed that they would attract drug dealers, sexual predators, and other criminals. The U.S. government representatives also threatened the city with forfeiture of property, fines of up to $250,000, and imprisonment of up to 20 years in jail. Denver City Councilman Albus Brooks responded to the letter by saying that the city cannot wait for federal action while the death toll rises. He added that people who would use the facility are not simply addicts, but are our neighbors, friends, and family members. Brooks also noted that there are studies finding supervised sites have no effect on local crime and they reduce emergency calls. The state legislature will likely consider Denver's plan this upcoming session. In related news, the City of Denver has announced a plan similar to that of the Boulder District Attorney to help people vacate and seal convictions for low-level marijuana violations. Mayor Michael Hancock has ordered a citywide effort to correct what he called an injustice that needs to be corrected. The mayor's spokesman told the Denver Post that people can already attempt to expunge their records, but now the city will proactively help them. Denver's move follows that of the Boulder County DA's office, which announced recently that it would vacate and seal thousands of marijuana possession convictions. A law passed in 2017 allows people to seal their own records for misdemeanor use of or possession, but now at least two agencies in the state are assisting them. Coloradans legalized pot under the state constitution in 2012. It is estimated that in Denver, more than 10,000 people have criminal records for minor cannabis crimes between 2001 and 2013. In recent public appearances, Governor-elect Jared Polis has been accompanied by a protective detail that is larger than the one Governor Hickenlooper has had. The Colorado Sun reports that the additional security is prompted by a rise in activity by anti-Semitic organizations in the state. Increased safety measures were seen on election night at the Democratic Party gathering, where attendees were required to walk through a series of metal detectors to enter the ballroom where Polis made a victory speech. While the Colorado State Patrol would not discuss any threats or details about the security, a spokesperson did say that the goal is to make sure people feel safe, and the patrol will provide security that is required. In the past 6 months, anti-Semitic threats and speech have reached higher levels, according to the state's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. The director of that office said that the increase is very concerning. There is also concern about an increase in incidents of hate crimes based on race, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Marty Moore, who is director of Out Boulder County, told The Sun that although Colorado elected Polis, a gay Jewish man, there is a minority of voters who are mad about it. Many federal offices will be closed today in a national day of mourning for President George H.W. Bush. There will be no mail delivery, and all post offices will be closed, as will all federal offices. In the weather, it will be partly sunny with a high near 43 today and an overnight low of about 18. Tomorrow, there's a chance of snow showers before 11 in the morning and a high of 31. Right now, it's about 23 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Well, on the same day that Xcel Energy was making news by announcing a plan to dramatically reduce carbon emissions by 2050, Boulder City Council was weighing whether to proceed with a condemnation lawsuit against Xcel in the ongoing effort to create a municipal electric utility. KGNU's Ros Brown has more from last night's Boulder City Council meeting.
Xcel Energy announced yesterday it has committed to reduce carbon emissions in the eight states it serves by 80% in 2030 and 100% by 2050. And Brad Siegel thinks Boulder and its residents deserve a little credit for that.
I'd like folks to remember that one of the reasons why Xcel is doing all this stuff is because of the efforts we've taken to push them. And every time we've had an election, they've always come up with some new plan for renewables. That's good. We're helping push this organization that is affecting our state and eight others.
On Tuesday, Xcel promised to permanently move away from fossil fuels and aggressively pursue renewables. It just happened to be the same day a vote was scheduled by Boulder City Council on whether to pursue a lawsuit against the company in order to acquire property owned by Xcel that would ultimately allow Boulder to proceed with its nearly decade-old goal to municipalize utilities. Despite the announcement from Xcel hours earlier, the majority of speakers addressing City Council, including Connor May, encouraged the path toward municipalization.
This is about more than just climate change. It's also about climate and economic justice and having cities really take the lead in controlling our destiny as opposed to these very large companies. Xcel's announcement today is not for 80% renewable generation by 2030, but only for 80% carbon reduction, which is a non-binding, that's laudable, but is non-binding, falls short of Boulder's own goals, and also could saddle the ratepayers of the state with extremely high research and development costs in order to try and make that happen.
Ajana Lowry was one of several CU students who urged council to proceed, noting Boulder's original goal to be a model for other cities.
It's a scary time to be a young person. I often wonder what kind of world my children will live in. I'm a senior in the Environmental Studies Department at CU. Clearly, the constituents in the city are informed and care to be involved in what happens in their community. With the presidential administration vehemently denying climate science, it is imperative that local governments take the initiative in ensuring a livable world for future generations.
The future for young people was also on the mind of Councilmember Lisa Morzel.
It is a lot more than climate change, and it's a responsibility to the future and a responsibility to future generations.
But not everyone was supportive of moving ahead with the muni. Renewable energy and utility reform advocate Carrie Chris Janer said she was originally a fan, but has changed her mind and now thinks Boulder should work with Xcel.
Reducing carbon emissions by 80% by 2030 is, to me, the most pivotal and amazing statistic. I'm really, really proud of Xcel Energy, and they are making a difference. And I do believe that they will be a model for other utilities because they're the first utility to make this kind of commitment in the nation.
Among the nine members, Councilman Bob Yates was the only no vote on pushing forward with the muni. He cited the millions already spent by the city and the costly and time-consuming lawsuit against Xcel that lies ahead.
We have checked in with the voters in Boulder several times during this winding and litigious path. In each instance, the vote has been close, with slightly more than half of the voters supporting exploration of municipalization and nearly half asking us to stop. In the last vote in November 2017, we asked the voters whether to continue the tax that pays the lawyers and the engineers in the fight against Xcel. By a margin of 52 to 48, the Boulder voters approved the tax. Some residents have said that City Council has no discretion in tonight's vote, that we must vote for the lawsuit in order to respect what they say was a mandate delivered by the voters last year. I respectfully disagree.
But Councilman Sam Weaver and Mayor Suzanne Jones felt the most recent vote by citizens to proceed with municipalization should play out.
We have gone out to the voters four times now, and we've always received approval to continue forward. And the last time that they approved it, they knew what the timeline would be, how much it would cost.
We're going to go find out the number, and then we're going to go to the voters and say, is this worth the cost? So I think this is an important step.
Boulder voters will have one more chance in the November 2020 election to make a go, no-go decision on whether Boulder should create its own municipal utility. And Boulderite Evan Freirich is looking forward to that day.
One of the things that I was thinking about today is when our citizens get to vote next on the muni, Donald Trump is going to be up for re-election. And I have a feeling our folks are going to come to the polls in big numbers. We are David, and Xcel is Goliath.
For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
It's 8:16. You're listening to KGNU. Don't forget you can subscribe to a podcast of The Morning Magazine if you'd like to listen to it again, or maybe you have other things going on in the morning. So listen at your leisure anytime. Just search for KGNU wherever you get your podcasts. Well, later this morning at the School of Education at CU Boulder, a new book is being released. It's called Lift Us Up, Don't Push Us Out, Voices from the Front Lines of the Educational Justice Movement. And it features an essay from Padres y Jóvenes Unidos co-founder Pam Martinez. I spoke to Jake Cousins of the Education and Social Justice Organization that's based in Denver about its work and about the book.
It's a collection of essays and stories from folks who have been on the front lines of the education justice movement around the country. And one of the essays is written by Pam Martinez, who is the co-founder of our organization, of Padres, kind of telling the story of their work against school pushout and fighting the school-to-prison pipeline here in Colorado.
Well, when we use a term like educational justice, what does that actually mean, particularly in a city like Denver?
Yeah, so in Denver, our current work centers around making sure that Black and brown students are not pushed out of their schools or suspended or expelled at disproportionate rates. We are working currently to reduce school policing and reduce the number of police officers in our schools, all while aiming to provide better restorative justice and mental health supports in our schools.
And how is Denver doing? Let's focus specifically on that city and Denver Public Schools, because I know that's really been a focus of a lot of the work done by Padres.
Yeah, we've started in Denver and have been working here for a long time. You know, I think that there, over the last 10 years or so, Denver has made some strides, which is great, but there's still a lot of work to be done. Expulsions and suspensions have increased for the last 2 years. We still see racial disparities for Black students and Native American students and Latinx students in terms of how often they're suspended or expelled. And we continue to expand the DPS, Department of Safety's budget. So again, investing in policing and hardening our schools rather than in restorative justice and mental health and other programs that we'd like to see. So still work to be done for sure.
And have Denver Public Schools, have they been responsive to the issues that you've raised? Because you consistently release reports, you have a lot of data backing up what you're saying. Are you then seeing changes or at least attempts to change some of the areas that you're identifying as problems?
Yeah, I mean, we are certainly calling for them to change it. They have been responsive in some areas over the years, but recently have been less willing to take the concrete action that we know our students and our parents need, and that's why we're continuing to push them.
So what concrete action would you like to see happen?
We'd like to see all school resource officers removed by 2020. We'd like to see the DPS Department of Safety not have any armed officers, and we'd like to see the district spend a lot more money in supporting proactive, you know, supports that we know our students need, like restorative justice, like social and behavioral health, like mental health support, and to pay for that, we'd like them to significantly cut the Department of Safety's budget.
Well, this book that is being released, there's an event at CU in Boulder on Wednesday morning at 11:30 a.m., and it's called Lift Us Up. And as we said, it's telling the story of how Black and brown parents and families of colour, students and educators and allies are fighting back about all the various different systemic inequalities that we're seeing throughout our public education schools. And the organisation that you're part of, Padres, that very much has been family driven. It's been the parents that have been pushing for this. Can you give us some stories of successes that you've had where you've had very engaged parents and very engaged communities really pushing for more equity in public education? What has been achieved?
Absolutely. So we're multi-generational organization, which means it's not just parents but also students who lead our charge and who guide our work. And we've accomplished everything from ensuring that racist principals in the 90s were removed from Denver to making sure that Denver Public Schools provides comprehensive bilingual education supports to all of its students as mandated under federal law. We have successfully, we're part of the campaign that landed in-state tuition for undocumented students here in Colorado, and we negotiated an intergovernmental agreement between Denver Public Schools and the Denver Police Department to really define and constrain the role of school resource officers to make sure that they're not involved in school discipline in any way.
Well, we are heading into a new legislative session in just a few weeks. In January, we're going to start with Democratic control of the State Senate and the State House. Do you have any pieces of legislation that you're hopeful will get through pertaining to the work that you do?
We do, yeah. We are a part of a couple of different coalitions and steering committees that are coming together. We're looking at our statewide school discipline laws. We're looking at our budgeting priorities when it comes to school, and we're going to be active in making sure that all students are able to purchase or who qualify for free or reduced lunch who actually get it for free. So we're going to be involved in the next session for sure.
Jake Cousins of Padres y Jóvenes Unidos. The book Lift Us Up, Don't Push Us Out, Voices from the Front Lines of the Educational Justice Movement will be released later this morning at the School of Education at CU Boulder. And it will be followed by a panel discussion featuring Pam Martinez, who is the co-founder of Padres. It is 8:22 and it's time now for Make Them Hear You. Make Them
Hear You. This is Make Them Hear You with ideas of how you can have your voice heard before Congress. A D.C. neighborhood has voted unanimously to name the street the Saudi embassy is located on after slain journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Now it goes to the D.C. City Council, and after that, before the U.S. Congress. And if it passes, the address of the Saudi embassy will forever have the name of the person their crown prince may have ordered the murder of. Donald Trump will not be pleased. He wants to turn a blind eye to this murder because of the money our military industry will make selling the Saudis more weapons. In the meantime, the Senate has taken a major first step in ending the U.S. support of the Saudi-led war in Yemen, which Bernie Sanders calls, quote, morally indefensible, and that Congress never voted to authorize. Our support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen has been one of the great moral stains on our nation, resulting in the worst humanitarian crisis on earth. More than 85,000 children in Yemen have starved to death, while millions more faced imminent starvation. 10,000 new cases of cholera occur each week as people are unable to find clean drinking water, close quote. The bill invokes the War Powers Resolution of 1973, which states that if U.S. troops are involved in hostilities abroad without a declaration of war or specific statutory authorization, such forces shall be removed by the President if the Congress so directs by concurrent resolution. The tripartisan Sanders bill had 63 votes in favor and 37 against, the first time in our history that the Senate has voted to withdraw from an unauthorized and unconstitutional war. Sanders said, quote, "It is not the president who gets to decide whether or not we get to go to war in Yemen or Syria or anywhere else. It is Congress," close quote. Trump has threatened to veto this bill if it gets to his desk. The U.S. slammed the brakes on the U.N. Security Council resolution on a ceasefire in Yemen. The U.S. has been encouraging and supplying Saudi Arabia's war crimes in Yemen since March of 2015. Now the war is the worst man-made humanitarian catastrophe on Earth, with untold numbers dead, injured, or suffering from disease and starvation. On October 2nd, the Saudis lured Jamal Khashoggi, a U.S.-based Saudi journalist and critic, to their consulate in Turkey and murdered and dismembered him. That tipped things for many senators who have supported the Saudis. These senators and representatives who helped Trump cover up Saudi war crimes and our complicity are now using the Khashoggi killing to address the slaughters in Yemen. After the 63-37 vote, a full-floor debate in the Senate is next. The House of Representatives recently shut off debate on a similar resolution. Whether that changes this week is now up to the American people. If you have an opinion on Sanders' tripartisan bill to invoke the War Powers Resolution of 1973 and similar attempts to push this in the House, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's 8:25. You're listening to KGNU. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll have the real deal in sports. And in fact, it's the last real deal with host Josh Chetwynd, taking a look today at the double standards for women in sports. And as always, your calls will be welcome. Right now, though, it's time for Naturally.
Hello, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. Today's topic is frankincense, an herb that we often hear about, but really, what is the deal with frankincense? Well, frankincense, its Latin name is Boswellia sacra or Boswellia carteri. They're actually the same plant, but they have synonyms, are members of the Burseraceae or the balsam family. The genus name Boswellia was given in honor of the Scottish botanist John Boswell. And the common name frankincense is believed to be a rephrasing of the term incense of the Franks, as this was an herb introduced into Europe by Frankish crusaders. What frankincense really is a resin. It's a small shrub, and in order to extract the resin, then one simply slices into the shrub, and this resin exudes, and then the resin dries into a whitish plant. It's a plant that grows in hot, sunny, desert conditions, and what we collect, this resin, are actually called tears. So frankincense has long been burned as an incense, and I know it's familiar to many people because it's one of the gifts, one of the three gifts of the wise men to the Christ child. But why would they give incense as a gift? Well, frankincense is very antiseptic, and when burned in synagogues, temples, churches, or even on an altar, it helps to send one's prayers heavenward and also helps to dispel any negativity, including bacteria and viruses that might be prevalent in the area. Frankincense is currently used as a medicinal herb. It is anti-catarrhal, meaning it's good against coughs. It's an anti-inflammatory, very antioxidant. It's a rejuvenative, so it's being used in a lot of cosmetic properties like lotions and facial masks because of its new skin growth stimulating properties. We know that frankincense improves circulation of both blood and energy. It helps to clear obstruction. It helps to prevent free radical damage. And I'm seeing frankincense used internally and topically for conditions like asthma, bronchitis, cancer, and even hypertension. It's used a lot topically these days in liniments or salves to help relieve the pain of arthritis or from injury. And when used topically, it can also help to heal wounds and prevent scarring. Frankincense can be included in mouthwashes for gum health to prevent pathogens in the mouth, and also as a steam inhalation to improve respiratory ailments. You can buy frankincense essential oil, which is a way of enjoying the frankincense without all of the smoke. And its use as an incense goes back to ancient Egypt. It's really quite nice to smell. The smell is said to calm and clear the mind. So frankincense is warming, drying, and when using it internally, it's best used only for a short period of time, and it is an herb that is not suggested to be used during pregnancy. Thanks so much for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
You can hear Brigitte Mars and Naturally every Wednesday morning right here at KGNU.